Well, hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Church Leadership Lab. We are certainly glad that you're here, and we're glad to have another conversation with the goal of empowering healthy churches. That's what we're about. That's what we get to do here on this podcast. And to introduce your hosts, starting with the one and only Casey Frazier.
I got to go first?
You got to go first.
Man.
It makes you feel sweet. Terrible, though. You're like, oh, I finally got to go first. Jeez,
no, thanks. Well, listen, I am just your sidekick. Let's be very honest. I tell everyone that. You know that. Like, let me introduce to Scott. This is actually, he knows what he's doing. I just get to show up and talk sometimes. I come second. Let's be, I know my place.
No, I disagree. And I think that we are co-hosts. Like, it's true sense of the word.
It is, yeah. Co-host, there's been enough of them now, right? Where we are co-hosts.
Yes. So this is Casey. My name's Scott. And yeah, we're really glad to be here today to have another conversation with you. And Casey, now people won't or may know this if they're avid listeners of the podcast, but you and I, just to give people behind the scenes, we're coming off weekends of kind of busyness, craziness. So gymnastics meet for you, winter youth retreat that I was leading, help lead worship, junior high school boys, all that stuff. I was in the high school boy cabin, all that. So how was it for you? Did you make it?
Well, first of all, I'm the one that always brings up topics that I'm not supposed to, because you know, we're like not supposed to mention, like, this was recorded on this day.
It's
but
true.
I wanted to ask, like, we connected on Friday, today's Monday. And I was like, I hope we both survive. And like, we're here, we did it. But you did mention something that I feel like we should clarify. You said I was at a gymnastics meet. I think it's important to mention that was my daughter's, not mine. Like, I'm just saying, like, there was a day, but that day was like a couple decades ago. But yes.
Casey, how'd you do? What place did you come in?
Well, like, I've been training really hard. But no, like, I'm going to brag for 1 second. My daughter's 13 and she has had a really, really tough season. And she finished first place on Saturday.
Awesome.
And like, we, of course, winning is great. Not going to lie. Winning's great. But seeing her have confidence and joy out of this sport that she works so hard. She goes to gym 5 days a week right after school, and she has a 4.0 grade average. And like, to see her have joy with confidence, like,
I love it.
That's so good. So it was a great weekend. It. But what about the high school boys?
Yeah.
That much more tumultuous.
It was great. I mean, youth retreat in general was awesome. Mm-hmm. I was able to lead worship. I had two of my kids along, you know, there as well. So it's just an awesome time for sure. I'll brag a little bit on myself because we played, there's a game called Broomball, which is like, imagine hockey, but you don't have a hockey stick. You just kind of have like a stick with like an end on it. That's like a broom. It's not even a broom. It's like a plastic piece, a little ball. That's like a miniature soccer ball. And instead of ice skates, you just wear your shoes on the ice. So it's like an ice rink. And what I'm proud of is I survived it.
That's an accomplishment, you know?
With 30 other junior high school people running around. Now, I chose the position of goalie because it seemed like the best option to avoid injury. And other than getting hit in the shins a few times, we made it. So
that sounds overall, like a wise choice. Well, yes. I'm glad that we're both here. You know?
We did it. Yeah. And we made it and we're here. And I'm super excited today because we get to have a conversation with Blue Van Dyke, the founder and president of the Studio C. Now, Blue has a rich background as an international marketing executive, venture capitalist, executive pastor, and a ton of experience just as a diverse, experienced strategic leader. Now, his career spans multiple industries, various organizations, everything from automotive leader, Daimler-Benz, to a digital marketing agency, Proxicom, and then one of the country's largest non-denominational churches, Christ Church of the Valley. Now, in 2020, he founded the Studio C, merging industry excellence, digital transformation with church member engagement. Known for innovative thinking, his current mission is to help church leaders align their member engagement strategies. He has a passion for church growth, and that really drives Studio C's vision, inspiring confidence, driving valuable results. Blue, we're so excited to have you here on the podcast. Welcome.
Oh, I'm super happy to be here. Thank you. I think even that little intro, you oversold. I appreciate it. It was terrific. Thank you. But really excited to be here and just talk with you guys. Every time I meet with somebody else like you two, it seems like I take away more than I give. So thank you for letting me be on here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, all right. We shared the kind of the public bio. But one thing we like to ask all of our guests is what's something that all your friends and family would know about you that doesn't necessarily make the public bio?
Make the bio. I will tell you, there is a little bit of a cowboy blue out there, right? So my alter ego grows a beard, heads out in the woods. I chase around animals with a bow and arrow a little bit. You know, it's a complete separate mode from what my normal day to day is, which I absolutely love. I actually try to go, it's crazy, I try to go a whole week alone in the woods, right? I mean, I don't want to oversell that. I'm in a trailer, right? I'm in a fifth wheel TV, so it's not that rugged. But I get out there and I just be quiet and grow my beard and hang out and chase animals around. So that's definitely alter ego blue.
That's hey, awesome. You could come to Oklahoma. We could go deer hunting and just like set you. We could drop you off in the middle of a tree stand. And be like, we'll come back in 7 days. Hope you do think well.
That sounds crazy? That sounds like treat. That's a vacation. It's funny you say that, but honestly, anytime I can go unscheduled, right? It's not even about being busy. Like I stay really active out there. I'm cutting firewood and I'm doing stuff, but I don't have to, right? I don't have to stop, and I get to go do something else when I just feel like it, which is often like a nap or something like that. But to just be unscheduled, that's just such a treat for me.
Yeah.
Nap. That sounds lovely. I would love to know more about this mythical word nap.
We kind of joke about it last time. So there's things like you spot for animals, right? You go up on a mountain, you just look through binoculars and glass. I made it about 30 minutes before I fell asleep and woke up about 4 hours later. So whenever I say I'm going hunting, my wife just looks at me like, yeah.
You're going napping. Let's be real. Right? That's perfect. Well, we would love to talk a little bit more specifically about the Studio C, of course. So can you, and I'm sure this is something that's not going to be difficult for you to do, but share the vision behind just the history of Studio C, how that kind of came to exist. Where'd the vision come from? And just like, how did that take shape for you?
Oh, I love it. You know, this sounds crazy, but it's really the sum of my parts. So as crazy as it sounds, it's a 30-year vision. Now, I wish I could tell you I planned that out. I am not that smart and not plan the last 30 years strategically. This just sort of came about. But right out of grad school, I ended up going into the marketplace and I worked for an automotive company. And literally their number one target, I was on the marketing side, right, of this auto company, fairly large. You mentioned it was Daimler-Benz. And I thought it was all about really cool ads. And it took about a minute and a half before they explained, like, that's not how we grow, kid. We grow by taking our existing customers, getting them to love us, and they sell the product for us. So I really quickly got you know, educated in this idea of what they call customer engagement, i.e. member engagement. But for 30 years, I've run this play called take your existing members or customers and turn them into advocates, right?
Yeah.
And then I moved from there into the digital advertising space. So this ages me a little bit, but this is the advent of the internet, right? Late 90s, early 2000s. But our agency, we'd go out and we had some tier one clients, you know, the Toyotas and Marriotts and stuff of the world. But here's literally what we'd say is quit advertising or talking to everybody. We can now use this thing called the internet to segment your customers so you can target a message, right? I remember literally saying to the Toyota guys, quit advertising to the CEO of Ford. He's not buying a Toyota, right? Yeah. I promise you. So, you know, there was that piece of it. So you got engagement and then you've got personalization. I was fortunate after that to get into venture capital, and everybody oversells what that means. What it means is you find somebody who's doing something well, figure out how to scale it for a bunch of other companies, right? How do you grow it? So I really took what we were running as this play and just figured out how to do it for a lot. But anyway, you know, I made it from there into church to be very specific on Studio C. And I just looked at it and I believe there had to be an application for everything I did in the market for the church. Yeah. So I just churchized that play I'd been running for 30 years. Which was called take our members, turn them into advocates, send them out. They'll bring people in church for us, which is pretty much the Great Commission, right?
Right.
But then how Studio C came about is I actually, you know, when COVID hit and all these churches started calling me and saying, hey, do you know, how did you do that? And I'd have to say to them, man, I built a whole team inside of our church. I called it our studio team and they ran this play for us. And it was some tech data, some technology, some messaging. And again, it was called our studio team. And I kept saying afterwards, man, the Big C Church needs a studio team like that. And eventually that's where Studio C actually even came from, as we just spun it up and decided to run that play for a bunch of churches.
I love that. I think one of the things that's really interesting, and I appreciate you sharing too, because I know we said it kind of briefly in a bio, but for you to kind of dig in a little bit more to your experiences, because you do have a really diverse background, from marketing at some of the highest levels and seeing people do that really well, but also time in the church as a pastor. And I think given that you've kind of been in both worlds, what are, you mentioned some briefly here, but what are some of the things that the marketplace knows about marketing, or, and we can, we can swap out that works. I know some church leaders and pastors hear it and they're like, I'm not selling something, so why do I need to market something? And we could just say, maybe swap it out with connecting with people, engaging with people, whatever it might be. But what are some things the marketplace knows about that, that you really wish the church would embrace?
Yeah, I love it. And I'm going to go through a couple of them because, but they tie in. I think in its most simplified form, if you took this, it's just called a customer journey, right? Means at some point or other in the church world, I call it a member journey from in the church world, you know, they're not yet a Christian. They don't know anything about this. And at the very bottom, they're fully committed to follow Christ. And so you can call that a disciple or what you want. But there's a lot of steps in between, right? And I think what a lot of churches believe is that for me to grow, I need to spend more money advertising. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's not the case. For you to grow, you need to spend more time getting your members to be fully engaged in this discipleship journey, this process, and they will grow your church for you. They're going to naturally go out to their brother and their aunts and their uncles, and they're going to bring more people in. And that's way more effective, right? I try to tell people, there's no ad I could ever build that's going to convert as well as Scott inviting his neighbor to come to church, right? That just works better. I used to actually, on staff, literally, I told our comms team, any marketing we do is not designed to bring somebody to church. Its job is to credential the invite from one of our members, right? So when I go to one of my neighbors, I wanted them to go, oh, I've heard of that church. Maybe they're not weird, right? Or something like this. So first, I'd say is to grow, focus more on your existing members for the sake of growth. That's not being inward focused. That's saying I'm going to get them so bought in, they can't help but bring everybody to church, right? So that's one of the big changes for sure. The other that I can't believe is I think you got to keep it simple, right? We tend to overcomplicate things. And people ask me all the time, sort of, what's the big difference I see from ministry and marketplace? Sometimes I feel like we in ministry like to complicate things. I think we like it to sound complicated. Right. I know. Because we need to figure it out. The marketplace just values simplicity, right? I mean, the iPhone is incredibly complex, but they made it really simple for me to buy and operate. So that would be another big trigger, I'd say, is we got to figure out how to take this thing, which can be complicated, and simplified enough for people to understand.
Yeah.
That makes a ton of sense. I mean, just everything shifting towards digital, you know, right? Like you kind of mentioned aging ourselves. We've all aged ourselves. Like we're all cloud-based. We're all internet. We're all these things. So kind of putting yourself into that mindset, I think it's really easy to complicate something that is so big, so rapidly growing, and honestly, intangible. It's hard to wrap our hands around it. So it's really easy to over-engineer it when we can't like touch it and feel it and break it down into these really simple bits. But if you can, kind of putting your mind in that digital space, I feel like the word engagement is maybe overused or buzzword today, but that seems to be one of the biggest challenges that a lot of church leaders have of how do I engage the people who are coming? So based on what you do, what you've seen, and through the lens of the Studio C, what are maybe some of the biggest mistakes that church leaders make when their goal is, how do I engage people? Where are we missing the mark?
Yeah, I love it. I think that you hit on something too. I do think engagement has become kind of a buzzword, and I'm not even sure. So here's a little bit about how I define it. And again, part of my philosophy is, how can I simplify it down, right? So I just say, what are the things you would have people do if you could wave a magic wand and have them do them? And it's those things we have them do because we believe that when they do them, the probability of their heart changing for the Lord goes way up. Okay. Now it's not about the thing. It's about the hopeful outcome of doing that thing. So in our church, that's stuff like getting baptized, getting in a small group, serving, sharing of our faith, giving. These are all spiritual disciplines that we hope people get involved in because we just know that when you do that, something miraculous happens and your heart starts to shift for the Lord. Okay. So that's what I mean by engagement. What are those things? They're unique, slightly unique for most churches. The truth is we're all doing a lot of the same stuff, right? We're all getting people in small group and serving and giving. Here's here's what I think is the big mistake that churches do, is they assume everybody's at the exact same place in their spiritual life cycle, and they assume they all run at the same pace, right? So all of a sudden we talk to everybody as if nobody's in group, or we talk to everybody as if this is the right time for them to get into group. What we really need to do is think of them uniquely. I will tell you, this is a little anecdote, but I love it because I think it brings this home. When I first started working for the church, now, mind you, I mean, this is a little unfair because I just came out of an agency where we do this on a regular basis. But I'm sitting in there in my office and I get an email that spits out and it says, hey, Blue, don't forget to sign up for group right after service. So I printed it out and I remember I wrote on there, hey, I've been in a group for 16 years. I've been leading a group for the last 11 years. I said, this email just did two things for me. One, it told me that after 16 years, my church still doesn't actually know me. And it told me that I can ignore every future email because they're obviously not relevant for me.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where I went down and I said, here's the journey I think churches need to go on. How do we get the right message to the right person at the right time on the right channel? Right. We're not all at the same place. We have to think of people uniquely. And then I think the biggest, so don't assume everybody's at the same place, right? Talk to people uniquely where they are. So you have to know that. You got to do some work with some data and some other stuff to find out where people are. And then stop blasting the message over and over and over again to everybody, right? Yeah. So it's what I call multi-channel versus omni-channel. We have multiple ways we can talk to people. I can send them an email. I can send them a text message. I can make a phone call. I can do this, right? What happens is most churches blast the same message out on every single channel and just hope it somehow lands on the right person, right?
Yeah.
That's out there. And the analogy I give, I mentioned to you, I like to hunt. That'd be like me going out in the woods for your deer hunting, Casey, and just shooting an arrow in every direction and then shooting guns and just hoping eventually something hits something I'm trying to hit a target, right? Which is ridiculous. So I'm a big believer in use the right channel. We want to take people on these journeys, these message journeys, and talk to them where they're at and what they're doing. And, you know, people don't get that. Sorry, I know you got me going on this thing, but most churches, I think, I say it once and I'm just done. It takes on average 6 to 10 touch points before somebody actually does something.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So of all the churches we work with, for instance, at Studio C last year, we got 700,000 steps taken, meaning somebody started doing something they weren't doing before, getting into group. But that took 4.5. We had 700,000 unique new steps. Right. So the churches we work with, these are people that started. But here's the point that I was trying to make is it took 4.5 million messages to get those 700,000 steps.
Right? Wow.
You can't just say go to group and everybody goes, oh, okay. I've got to talk to him.
Why didn't you say so?
Right. You know, so that's the point, is that you can't stop. It's not a one and done. It's an entire engagement. There's that word of how to do these things.
Well, yeah. I got to imagine too, that like you said, if there's multiple touches and take that email you received, if you are just blasting everything to everyone, like one of the responses you had to that was, I now think most emails I get from you are not relevant. And so I wonder too, is part of this process building that trust so that as you are communicating, it's like, hey, we're not just sending an email to send an email or a text or whatever. We're doing this because it's actually important and it matters for you where you're at right now.
Completely. Yeah, I do believe that. And it's not also just asking you to do something. So I always say there's really two fundamental things. I want to recognize you as a member of this community and say, I know you, and I want to encourage you to grow in your faith. In my opinion, those are the two things we're trying to convey in a message. I recognize and know you, and I'm encouraging you. And where it came from is I would stand outside of the auditorium after service, and I'd just look for somebody. I'd shake their hand, and I'd ask them about their wife, and I'd ask them about his kids. And I'm saying, I know you. I know who you are, and we've got a rapport and a relationship. And then I would say things like, hey, are you ready to start serving yet? Are you ready to start doing this thing? And so I kind of hit both of them. And what I said is we can do that outside. I mean, it always performs better relationally. If you can shake hands and talk to somebody, do that. That's better. It really is. But how do you do that at scale, right? While I'm having that conversation, 52 people are blowing by me on the sides that I can't talk to. So recognize them and encourage them. One of our best performing messages when we build these things, I always tell churches, recognize your people for their baptism anniversary. Right. And I say that because nobody else on the planet does that, right? Starbucks says happy birthday, but they're not talking to me about the most important decision I ever made. Yeah. So with data, you can go out and know who got baptized, when they got baptized, remember that, and send them a message. You're not asking for anything. You're just congratulating them on the best decision they ever made. But it says, I know you, right? And better yet, serve them up a picture of the time they got baptized so they remember the day and they kind of have this moment they go back to. And anyway, that type of stuff that we really encourage.
Well, I think a little bit of what you're talking about is there's so much that goes into it, right? And you've talked about a lot of the process, but communicating with people effectively is no small task. It's not it's difficult, especially as distraction. There's more noise, all of that, you know, from what you say, when you say it, how you say it, there's a ton of factors. But I would love to hear, and you've already shared a few. I mean, how can church leaders, regardless of the tools they're using, what they're doing, how can they get better at sort of that science of messaging, of communication, to more effectively connect and communicate with their people?
I love it. I think at the highest level, it starts with sort of structure. How are you organized to think about communicating as a core component? And so in the marketplace, and we bring it in, there's always sort of what I call the three P's. It's actually the four P's of going to market. So product, the placement, the promotion, the price. Well, we're a church. We don't charge for this. So kill price, right? But I look at the three P's. What's our product? And give me grace. I love the church, right? But when I say product, it's our weekend experience. It's our group ministry. We dial that in. We spend a lot of time. And then I say, how do we distribute that product? What's the placement? Well, we put a lot of energy into our campus and our facilities and even our online venue. And then how do we tell the whole world why they should consume that product, why it's so valuable? That's the promotions piece. Hmm. And most churches don't bring in what I'm going to call structure or science around promotions. It's a little bit of Wild West. Everybody just say what they want to whomever they want. Yeah. So I really, really encourage people to say, put as much weight on promoting or messaging or communicating as you do on creating. You created this great message. You spend a lot of time to make sure it gets in front of people. Spend as much time to make sure they understand why and what's going on. So structure formally around it. And then after that, I think that the pieces are, you have to know your people. So at some point or another, nobody likes this word data, but we have to use data to understand our people and recognize them. Yeah. The little churchy poke I give sometimes is, I wish I could sit at a well and know how many times somebody was married instantly and what was going on. I don't have that power, right? Yeah. So I have to use data to help support their journey, to help shepherd them through what we're looking for. And then you need some sort of vehicle to put them into buckets, groups of people. If you can do it individually and you're small enough, great. As you get larger as a church, you have to start what's called segmenting your audience, putting them into buckets. So you need to segment them. So know them, segment them, and then have something relevant to say and a way to put it in front of them. Right. Mm-hmm. So you need a messaging platform that delivers the right message at some point, whether that's on their mobile app or as an email or in a text. We want that right message to go to them.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, can you help us understand a little bit, because we've, talked about those things and kind of all of these components. And I know that Studio C takes all of this stuff and then kind of helps do that. But can you help people understand kind of how you do that, sort of where you sit, you know, in between other tools that people have, might be using, and just help them kind of understand. And here's how you help do that in a really effective way.
Yeah, I would love to. And I'm going to give you just a little bit of context, even of where it came from is, you know, being part of a fairly large church and a well-resourced church, we were able to pull some of this stuff off. But what would happen is I'd have a lot of churches come visit and just kind of say, hey, how are you growing? What do you guys do? And by the time I got done articulating what it was and how much we spent on technology and tools and everything else, these churches would look at me like, thanks, right? It's just there's no way. It's
nice for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you could have led with that and saved me about 4 hours of meeting with your Van Dyke. What I said is, when we started this, I wanted to figure out a way to architect this so that it was achievable and accomplishable by all kinds of churches of all sizes. So literally, we sit in the middle of technology, right? You don't have to dump your tech stack to do any of this. But at some point, we need some sources of data. So that's traditionally a church management system. And there's a lot of, you know, you guys have a beautiful one, but we sit out there and then we pull in this idea of how do we get that data out of there so that I can structure it by human being. Right. So I have all of this data sources under Scott. Now, it's not limited to the church management system. Right. And what I mean by that is, I have one church that keeps t-shirt sizes on a Google Doc. Right. And so we pull that in. So for whatever reason, you need to send a message to everybody who wears a small, I don't know, whatever, however you use that. But we pull this in and we just structure this data in a data warehouse so that we can align it and configure it, structure it so you can find it. And then we built a messaging platform where you build all of these targeted audiences. Who do I want to talk to and what do I want to say to them? And you choose the channel and you do all of this. And then we simply push that out into your mobile app or onto your website or any email. So it lives in the middle. And it's saying whatever you have today, right, to manage your tech and whatever you have today to talk to people, I'm just going to help you understand it, segment it, and create a personal message to deliver it. So it makes it easier to go out and actually talk to people individually about what's relevant from the data so that they can get some call to action out of it.
So
we live right in the middle. We're a little middleware. Sorry, Casey.
No, you're good. If Scott and I were both congregants of the same church, mm-hmm. and the church has decided that us being plugged into a small group was one of those milestones to gauge our level of connectivity to the congregation. So really practically, how would you use what you know about Scott and I as individuals to deliver a unique message where we both don't have the experience you had where you're like, you have no idea who I am and I don't have to open your emails anymore. Like, just what would be the differences? What, like, he and I would get what? Because it's kind of like a glorified announcement.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Totally. So what we would do is we would actually hijack the homepage of your mobile app. That's the channel we lean into predominantly. All right. So here's a little freebie for context. When people are considering going to a church, they don't go to your church yet and they're just thinking, maybe I'll go, I'm considering. They actually end up going to somewhere between 12 and 15 different websites before they'll ever show up on a campus. Okay. Yeah. So in my opinion, what we really encourage churches to do is make your website prospect centric. Think about it through the lens of somebody who's coming in. Now, when we did a little study and we asked people, like, when you're going to a website and you're considering going there, what are you looking for? And most of the answers were to see if they're weird, right? Or not, what it looks like. When we fill our website up with member stuff we're doing, it's not that what we do is weird as members, but it can sometimes look weird, right, to prospects. Sure. So I tell people, redesign your website, make it all about prospects. So conversely, the tool that I believe in and we really advocate for is your mobile app as the primary tool or channel to talk to your members. Okay, it's not the only one. I still believe in email and text message at the right time, but primary. So what we do is first thing we do is we hijack your existing mobile app and everybody, every member gets a personalized dashboard, right? So you get to see exactly where you are in your journey. So we expose out there where they are in the steps. This is what's important to us, getting into groups, serving, et cetera. We light up a component of that if they're doing it, and we don't light up it if they aren't. They can actually click on those little buttons and sign up. But it's a real way to just say, this is what we would encourage you to do if you want to grow in your faith. Mm-hmm. And here's what you've done, and here's what's still left to do. What's neat is then the messages that follow that are built on there are highly targeted based on where people on that journey. So the first thing I would do, Casey, I'd look, and if Scott's in, you know, already in a small group, he's not getting the message that says join a small group. Right. And if you're not, you might be getting that message. But let's just say, even for the sake of it, neither of you are in a small group and I have to message both of you. Then I'm going to look at some data points. And Casey, you may have already been in a group. So my messaging to me, you might be ready to try again. Right. Whatever didn't work last time, let's do something different. For Scott, you may have never been. And I'm going to say, man, here's the power when you collect, when you get with, you know, like-minded believers. And so the messaging can either be tailored to where you came from, what you're doing. The imagery can be unique. If I'm trying to get a 23-year-old into small group, I'm not showing a bunch of old people like me, right? We're going to show some younger people in the group and some imagery that converts better. So, you know, you're going to tailor. We may have at any given time, or you may have as a church at any given time, 5 or 6 different messages that say get in group based on your spiritual background, based on your journey already, based on your demographics. Any of that stuff can just help a highly targeted message.
Gosh, I love
that. Did that kind of answer it?
It does. I mean, like, on a really practical level, it's just, it's all the way back to what you said at the beginning. It's making sure that everyone that receives a message, whether it's in person, an email, a website, a mobile app, or an invite from another person, it was so personalized that I know that that church knows who I am, because the emails I get from spam, from marketing in the marketplace, they sure know who I am, shouldn't our local churches. And I love it. It's so powerful.
I couldn't agree with you. I'm so sorry. I get excited. Like, I just want to jump in really quickly and talk about this stuff. But what we're saying is, I think even more so, right? I don't necessarily care that Avis Rent-A-Car knows me as a human. I want them to know some particulars and make it an efficient process for me. But I want a relationship with my church. You are shepherding me in a very important component of my life, which is my spiritual development. And so people always get a little weird. Like, do the members worry that if we're using some of the information we already have to shepherd them better? No, they expect it. So what I used to tell my staff, if you want that data to help you, no. But if you're going to use that data to support ministering or shepherding somebody through their journey, if it's for them, they expect it of us. I want you to know me. It's what it's what in the marketing world is called a post-gate experience, right? So the analogy is we got a fence and there's some people on the sidewalk, and that's all the marketing. That's trying to get them from the sidewalk to come through. Once on the other side, I call it messaging and communicating, because once you've come into my yard, we should probably know each other, right? Yeah. At some point, I'm going to shake your hand. If I'm doing a barbecue and I'm invited my neighbors, I should know you by name. I should shake your hand. How much even better if I know what your favorite soda is or something, and I can have it ready for you. And I know you don't eat meat, or you do, or whatever that is, right? And I can just know you. That's what the church should be trying to do with their members. I know you better than I would a barbecue friend.
Yeah. And I think for me, one of the things, because I could hear church leaders pushing back on this, like, man, we're not selling something. This isn't Target. This isn't whatever. But what I would say is, it has become so normal for our experience engaging with in the digital landscape. It's just way that we experience things now is, yes, Amazon knows that I'm looking for a Bluetooth car adapter for my radio because I have old cars and the MP3 thing's broken, and they know I've been searching for it. And so they can personalize all that stuff. And so while we don't have to be Amazon or Target or whatever, it is becoming a norm for the digital landscape. So for me, it almost feels a bit of contextualizing as we are on mission, so that we can be in and of the world, but not become the world, you know?
Yeah. Scott, I love it. I'm sorry, Casey, go ahead.
No. Well, I would take it one step further too. Like, there's so many people who have been so hurt, either in the church or outside of the church. I feel like they are coming to the church looking for a reason to say, see, I told you don't know who I am. See, I told you I don't belong here.
Just a number. Yeah.
Yes. So to take all of that data that we are used to, Amazon knows me, cool. Target knows me, cool. But then to almost be waiting for the church to not know me as my excuse why I said, I was right. Yeah. So to build on that and like prove people wrong in the best possible way, it's a big responsibility. So I love that we're using that data to actually reach people where they are.
Well, I love that. Here's a big difference. Yes, Amazon has all that. They do that. The difference is, I know they want something from me. Right. At some point, they want to say they're looking for this. They aren't doing that just because they care about me. The advantage we have at church is to say, I don't want anything from you. I'm actually using this because my heart is to help shepherd or lead or lean into you. I want something for you. Right. And that's the beauty. We have a huge advantage. And most people today would say, if I've established a relationship with you, right, then I want you to take the extra effort. What we've done historically as a church, I feel like, is said, I'm going to put all this stuff out there, and I'm going to put the responsibility on you to kind of go through it all and parse away and curtail and find the thing that makes sense for you. And I think we should take the responsibility as a church to help lead them in a most intuitive way without having to have them go through all the stuff that's out there. Yeah. Right. When I was at the church in my office, one of the first things I realized after, you know, a couple of months on staff is I just wrote the word hack, put a red line around it, a red circle and a red line through it. I was like, no hack. Right. At some point, I got tired of hearing the words, it's good enough for church. I mean, we're just a church. Yeah. And I was trying to say the church should be leading in this. And if I'm used to this from the market, from shoes that I'm buying, by all means, something that's more meaningful, a product that's way more important called salvation, we should leverage everything at the same high level of quality and standards that we expect of the marketplace. Yeah. So for me, it does both of those. It really says, hey, I'm shepherding you better. And it demonstrates that the church isn't a laggard. We're going to use the same tools as we're doing to put people in luxury cars. We're going to put them in salvation. And it answers both of those for me.
That's so good. I love all of this. And I feel like we could just keep talking forever and ever, but I'm going to try to bring us home, Blue. We ask everyone that comes on the podcast the same question, and I really want to ask you as well.
Yeah.
What we do every episode is to help empower healthy churches. So in your opinion, from all of your experience, what you guys do at Studio C, what is one essential component of a healthy church?
Yeah, I love that. For me, it's alignment. Getting everybody aligned. Okay. So I'm a bit of a World War II enthusiast. Okay. I don't know if I'd go as far as buff, but I enjoy, I really enjoy reading and talking about, it hit me one day, and this, I don't know if this lands or not, but I'm trying. And I was reading about the invasion of Normandy. For years, I had this misconception that they found, like, how in the world did they find the absolute perfect point in all of France to enter and go through this? And as I was reading, I found out that that wasn't the case. In fact, there were so many options that the Germans had to spread out their defenses to do this. They say that part of the success of the invasion was that they aligned everybody on the same point, right? They had a, whatever, 180,000 men and 7,000 whatever planes and 11,000 boats. I don't know if those numbers, but a ton of people. And they were saying they cut off communication actually for 3 days before the invasion because they didn't want any word to leak out. So you had skippers of boats that hadn't talked to their bosses for 3 days that knew exactly what the mission was, what beach to attack, what the objective and where we're going from. And to me, churches need to be aligned because what I found is they've often got really, really strong resources, really smart people attacking different beachfronts.
Yes.
Right. And then they're wondering why they're not making traction. So alignment for me is by far number one. The second is I think we need to empower, this is what I see in churches, the people more. Right. At the end of the day, we think we've got a secret sauce for discipleship and where somebody should be. The people know better. Tell them what it is. They can engage themselves. They understand that. I have these really bad analogies, so you guys can, you know, laugh at them all you want. But COVID hit, and I was actually reading a Wall Street Journal article, and it was talking about how charter aircraft and private planes and the sale of those things had just boomed, right? And it was because they shut down the fleets and people still needed to get somewhere. So they actually ended up flying themselves to it. And I thought, and that was about the same time they were shutting down the church. And I thought, what a great analogy, right? What we've done for years and years is built these bigger 747s and made passengers, and then they shut down our fleet. And I think what we should be doing as a healthy church is build pilots instead of passengers. We should be arming these people. So even if the stage gets shut down, they're still flying their own plane. They know exactly how to grow in their faith and what to do. So I think alignment and this idea of what I just call pilots over passengers, but focusing on the people, I think are two really critical elements for a successful church.
Yeah. Not a cheesy analogy at all. I really love that. It's a really powerful image.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. And, you know, as we have our section we call Final Five, which is kind of rapid fire. That's coming up in a minute, but could you do us a favor? Could you just let people know, how can they learn more about Studio C, connect with you, your team? And I'm sure there's a lot of kind of gears turning with people. And so I'd love to give them some next steps to be able to, you know, explore what could be for them.
Love it. Yeah, we've got a lot of resources available like everybody else on our website. So thestudioc.org, O-R-G, so thestudioc.org. And you can go in there and we've got some of this life cycle and I've got a little bunch of little videos to help walk through it. But there's a really easy way to say just connect with us, right? We also have our normal social media on LinkedIn and Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, but the website's got the most material. They'll all point you to that anyways. And then if you just say, hey, I want to hear more, one of us will pick up the phone. It's usually me. I enjoy having this conversation with people, and we'll follow up and just answer any questions they have.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to link to that in the show notes, so it's super easy for people to get connected and chat with you and the team and even just take advantage of those resources so they can just get better at everything we've been talking about. All right, our final five, we're going to jump right in if we could. All right, first one, what is one book that you'd recommend to church leaders?
Listen, I am so old and so old school, right? But there's this thing called The Balanced Scorecard by Kaplan and Norton, and it reads like a textbook. So if you're looking for fun, you're going to be so mad at me when you get this thing. But I have run that play for 30 years, and it just says within any organization, I got to make sure that I set my goals, what we're trying to accomplish in four areas, right? So it's usually shareholder value or your finances, operational efficiency, your members in our church world or our customers, and your staff. So for 30 years, every company, whether, you know, we've acquired through venture capital, I've run, I structure around making sure that I'm improving in those four areas every single year. So I'm a huge Balanced Scorecard fan.
Love it.
Perfect. All right. Number two, some folks go super deep and it's like intellectual and, or some people, this is a confessional moment, but you have to be honest. What is the last thing that you listened to, like on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your music?
You already heard me going off reservation here a little bit. So now I'm already nervous, right? And some of these things. I'm being very, very honest. Literally pulling in the parking lot today, I had a little Fleetwood Mac going on. I just needed a little Fleetwood Mac coming in. So that was literally, if I'm, you know, full transparency, last thing. I do listen to the Wall Street Journal. They've got a podcast I listen to every day coming in. But anything of substance, I fly quite a bit too. So I was just listening to Kerry Newhoff's and John Mark Comer's had a podcast. That just recently came out, and I spent some time listening to that one. That was the last thing of sort of substance, not my daily routine, but something extra and above that I did.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's great.
Fleetwood Mac's what everybody's going to stick to, right? Because growing the beard, living in the woods, and listening to Fleetwood Mac, something does not match in any of that right there. I know it.
Right. I love it.
I love Stevie. So we're good. That was an excellent answer in my book.
Okay. All right. What is number three? What is your favorite piece of technology? Only rule we have on this one is you can't see your phone, because that's the default for some.
Yeah, that's too easy.
Yeah.
I love my Garmin watch. I have a watch I use for Garmin. It tracks my hiking. It tracks my biking. I use it for golf, you know, so I can get distances on it. But I'm still I get motivated by knowing I've accomplished something. So there's maybe my confession right there. I wish that it didn't matter to me, but I did a hike just yesterday and I came back and I made actually my kids look at how many steps I had. Right? I was so proud of it that I pulled up my watch and I made them do it. So big fan of my Garmin watch.
Nice.
Fair. All right, Blue, is there a quote or some wisdom, something that has just really stuck with you throughout the years?
I love that you did that. There was a rule or a principle that I read about that Colin Powell had. He called it his 40-70 rule. Okay. And he would often talk about battle, and he would say he felt very uncomfortable making a strategic decision with less than 40% confidence in it, right? 40% of the information or confidence in this decision. He said, but he made them even before he got anywhere above 70%. He did not wait to get above 70%. So he would wait till he had 40, but he would make a strategic decision with 70% of the info, move forward and adjust along the way. And that has really resonated with me. I think so many times we get stuck wanting 100% confidence in the decision we're about to make. Right. And I'm a huge fan of saying, man, I'm at least 70% confidence, right? I'm not going, you know, crazy on here. Sometimes it's 50 to 60%, but I'm going to move and check and move and check and move and check. But I've run against, you know, his 40-70 rule from a decision-making perspective quite a bit.
That's good. All right. Last one. Number five. What's one thing that you'd like to communicate to our audience of church leaders?
I think that, you know, there is you have to get clear on your methodology as a church. Everything else supports it. I think technology is submissive to the methodology. Please don't buy a tool if you don't know what it's supporting. I've said that before. Mm-hmm. So we ran a play at our church for 3 years called Engage Our Members for the Sake of Growth. And we didn't have a single tool, right? We didn't have a whole lot going on with this thing. So here's what I'd say is I truly believe that we should want to grow. I think it's a mandate handed down to us that churches should grow so the kingdom will grow. People grow spiritually, the church grows, and the kingdom grows in general. So growth should be an objective for all of us. I believe wholeheartedly that growth is most effective when you engage your own members and release this army of salespeople into the kingdom, right? So we want to grow, and I think growth is most effective through engagement. And I think engagement happens when you actually know your people and talk to them like you know them. So what I always say is it's growth through engagement, engagement through personalization. And if you can figure out those three things, I think it's a nice recipe for growing your church and advancing with that. But you got to be in alignment. Those three things have to work together. Yeah. And that's where technology should come alongside to either just support it or embrace it, but lock in the methodology first.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the way that you are helping people not only kind of understand that, think about that, because that is a new step for some people, even realizing that, but then also coming alongside to support them and help them do that. So thank you for the work that you're doing, that your team's doing, and the effect that it's having on the kingdom. We so appreciate it. And
well, man, thanks. You guys as well. So thank you. I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to make sure you know I get to tag along. You know, Casey, you say you're a sidekick. I don't know what that makes me. I'm just dragging behind in some way or another. So thank you guys for leading completely and just coming along folks like us to help with that piece of it. I really appreciate what you guys are doing as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we're also thankful for those of you listening or watching this, just the time that you've given. And we hope that it's been fruitful, that it's helpful, that ultimately it helps you as you lead in ministry, as you seek to serve people, grow the kingdom, and ultimately hope that it empowers a healthy church. And so if it has, we'd love to invite you to share a link with somebody, send it to them, say, hey, this was a conversation I found helpful. Like, subscribe, leave a review, all of those things. It just helps us get these conversations into the ears of more church leaders. So we appreciate that. And we look forward to next time as we get to have another conversation to help empower healthy churches. Thanks so much.
This episode of the Church Leadership Lab podcast is brought to you by Ministry Brands, the largest provider of church technology software.
Over 90,000 churches rely on Ministry Brands for their single platform solution that brings together all the digital tools a church needs. From online giving to websites to church management software and more, Ministry Brands is leading the way in simple-to-use, innovative solutions, all with the goal of empowering healthy churches. To learn more, visit ministrybrands.com.